to another edition of Gateway to Baseball Heaven, the final Gateway to Baseball Heaven of the 2018 spring season. I'm your host, Daniel Shoptaw, C70 at the Bat, at C70 on Twitter, and with me is Tara Wellman at Bird Seeds, at Birds on the Black, at Tara Wellman on Twitter. And Tara, I guess before we get into the show, because what is this show except for a place for us to promote things? Why don't you talk about your new Bird Seed series that you debuted this week and let people know where they can find it?
Well, I mean, that's why I do podcasts.
Exactly.
To be able to talk about myself. I am very excited. I have been planning and plotting and jotting down notes about some new things for quite some time, and one of them is this new series that debuted this week. I called it Episode Zero because it's not really the first episode of the season, but I needed to get something out there. I needed to do a bit of a trial run. So it's called About Last Night. It will live in the same place as Bird Seeds on my YouTube channel. It'll also be hosted on Birds on the Black, so you'll be able to find it there. But basically, it's a way that the viewers and I, all seven of them, can share a cup of coffee in the mornings and chat about Cardinals baseball. So one of the challenges I've run into doing video content in the past is that to do a weekly video about baseball is difficult because it's old news very quickly. Mm-hmm. So the only way to really combat that is to do something daily. Now, I've been very careful not to promise that this will be daily. Because, as you may or may not know, this is not my real job. And often my real job gets in the way of these fun projects that I do on the side. So, presumably daily, assuming I actually never run out of coffee, because I will need it to get up early and shoot a quick video and put it up there so that we can all relive the successes or failures of the night before and hopefully do it in an entertaining way. It seemed like people enjoyed the first episode, and I hope that continues as I put more of them out there. So About Last Night is the new series, a Bird Seeds production, if you will, and there'll be more to come.
I think Tara's totally going to cheat and record them after the game so that she doesn't have to get up early, but
I've thought about that, but I don't know that I have adequate lighting to pull that off without the window in my kitchen that provided much of the natural light. So I've thought about it. I'll probably write them and maybe do the intro after the games, but I do think I am still going to have to get up early in the mornings to do it.
All right. We'll keep it. I know how hard it is to get up and write every morning, so I can't imagine having to actually, you know, look presentable too. So we look forward to it, and it should be a lot of fun to go through the season. And
we'll see how presentable I look after those West Coast games.
Oh golly, yeah, that'll be fun.
I might just not go to bed those nights. That's just true. Wait for the sun to come up.
That's right. Okay, well, the season is upon us. Just about. The Cardinals will play on Thursday in New York. They have gotten in their plane, I assume, and have flown to Montreal. Have the Jupiter or the Florida part of their schedule is done. They'll play two games against the Blue Jays tomorrow night and Tuesday night for the day off and heading to New York. But this week has, as the end of spring training does, has brought some decisions, has brought some choices made, and then has brought a little bit of a twist and surprise as well. So we know what the 25-man roster is going to be. It's just not what we thought it was going to be last week. Let's talk about the most recent stuff first, and that is the fact that some point in time in the last day, Adam Wainwright pulled his hamstring doing conditioning drills, which, as the article on Cardinals.com by Joe Trezza points out, Luke Gregerson also strained his hamstring doing conditioning drills. I'm thinking they need to redo their conditioning drills because this is not working. And keep Carlos Martinez away from him.
Let's be real. Conditioning drills, you can't see it, but I'm doing air quotes. Conditioning drills is really code for they pulled their hamstrings because of the Matt Carpenter, Adam Wainwright scare games that are going on. That's obviously what's happening. And poor Luke Gregerson was probably an innocent bystander who got caught in the middle of the Wainwright versus Carpenter scare games, and now he's on the DL. So these guys better not injure any more of their teammates by, quote, conditioning drills.
There's collateral damage in every war,
yeah.
and Luke Gregerson apparently was it. Mm-hmm. So Adam Wainwright doesn't go north with the team, or he does because they don't leave him in Jupiter. That would be kind of silly. But
I just had this mental image of Adam Wainwright as the only one out on the field tomorrow, going like, guys, is it Matt? I know you're there. You're not going to scare me. Okay, continue. Sorry. I'm just developing the image as we go along.
Yeah. Tara's a very visual storyteller, as we all know. So Adam Wainwright will not be on the starting roster. Obviously, Jack Flaherty is going to return from his option down to Memphis, which is a little bit frustrating. Probably not going to matter. But the Cardinals burned an option on him this year. They have sent him down. Option is good for all year long, so when Adam Wainwright comes back, they can send him back down. But if Jack Flaherty is as good as we think he might be, well, they may not want to. So, again, it's probably just a moot point. It's just a little bit frustrating to see if they had just, if Wainwright could have done this last week, we wouldn't have wasted this. But, timing is everything. The rotation then lines up. I think that they decided to move Michael Wacha into that spot where he gets the home start. So it will be Martinez, Wacha, and I assume Michaelis against the Mets. And then Weaver and Flaherty will start against the Diamondbacks. I don't know. What are we worried about Wainwright with this? I mean, he looked so good in the spring. It's hard to see him get this kind of setback.
Yeah, it's been interesting to see the responses. Obviously, it's still very early, and a lot of people maybe don't even realize it yet if they're not quite as active on the Twitter as lame people like I am. But I was careful to not include you in that. Just want to be clear. I think that a lot of people were of the opinion that this is actually creating a better rotation as far as the talent is concerned. I'm very excited to see Jack Flaherty get a chance. I think the kid is super exciting. I think he's going to be a stud, and I'm anxious to see how well he handles the pressure of, that first big league start, especially when it's opening week. But I still think that there's a tremendous amount of value in the experience that Adam Wainwright has. And if he can be healthy and pitch even remotely close to like he did this spring, I would rather have Adam Wainwright than Jack Flaherty. And, I know that there are people who are of the complete opposite opinion. I realize that Adam Wainwright's age is a detriment to his consistency and to his ability to maybe pitch at a level that he once did. But his age is also of a great value because of the experience that comes with it and because of the leadership that he provides and because of the mentality that he has learned to have. That's part of the reason that I... First of all, let me just clear the air. The Chris Archer thing stopped being about reality a long time ago. So let's all just be very aware of the fact that when I keep harping on Chris Archer, it's because it's funny. I think it's funny, even if you don't think it's funny. Not necessarily because I think it's a legitimate option. Although, should the Cardinals choose to pursue it, I will wholeheartedly back that option. But part of the reason that I was all for a trade for Chris Archer in the offseason was because of that idea of having a proven commodity as opposed to a potential young superstar. The potential is great, but the youth will inevitably haunt them at some point over the course of that first season. And if you don't have the veteran guys to back them up, all the talent in the world is going to find itself in trouble now and then. So having someone with real experience, whether it's Adam Wainwright or Chris Archer, is of extreme importance, in my opinion. And because of that, I would love to see Adam Wainwright at least get a chance this season to pitch healthy and see what happens. And then if he can't do it, if he can't keep up, then move on. I mean, I don't know if that's actually going to happen, but, you know, there's no part of me that wants to see Adam Wainwright not be given a chance this year. Especially if he is healthy. If he's not healthy and he's pitching at 60%, then that completely changes the conversation, which is why I think this was the right move. I just am not quite as, I'm not jumping quite as high for joy as some people seem to be.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of look at this, and I do need to make a correction. It looks like Luke Weaver is going to be third in the rotation, so he would take that Mets start, and Michaelis then open up the series with the Diamondbacks. But, you know, you look at this rotation, and I guess the person with that would be considered the grizzled veteran right now is Carlos Martinez.
Which is why you need Adam Wainwright.
Yeah, and, I mean, it's, you know, Michael Wacha might, and I'd have to look and see, Michael Wacha probably has come up. Maybe he came up before Martinez, but he's been hurt enough that I imagine Carlos Martinez has more big league innings or starts. It may be close. But either way, these are not guys. I'm not saying that they can't lead a staff. Don't get me wrong. And these are guys that are very talented and do have some experience, but it's not the wealth of experience that a Wainwright or somebody else
can bring. I mean, they're both guys that are still trying to figure it out. Mm-hmm. And that's not a knock on them. That's not it's fine, but you know, there's something to be said about having gotten to that point where you know what to expect. I don't know that either Carlos Martinez or Michael Wacha are those guys right now. They have this massive amount of potential and they're fun to watch when they're pitching well, but when they struggle, they don't quite have that experience to reach back on to figure out what adjustments to be made, need to be made. And that's where, Adam Wainwright definitely has an advantage, even if he doesn't have the young arm, to back it up at this point.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about at the end of career, like Adam Wainwright, we were talking about him this year, and we're saying he may not, you know, he'll have some outings that are bad, but he'll have some outings that are good. There won't be necessarily a great consistency there. And that's what you get at the beginning of a career, too. And then a guy like Jack Flaherty, there's a good chance that he will go out in there and throw, you know, 9 or 10 very, very good starts this year. But there's a chance that he'll also throw 5 or 6 that are just terrible, and you don't know when they're going to come.
Right.
Just because of young. Now, he may not. I mean, he could go out there and be a guy that, you know, at the end of the year, we're talking about rookie of the year. Especially, I mean, I know your colleagues over at Birds on the Black, both Kyle Reese and Joe Schwartz, have raved over Flaherty and things of that nature, and I have no reasons to doubt that they're wrong. I mean, they're right. But, you know, it's just the nature of the beast and the nature of the game that sometimes, you know, young pitchers get beat up on at times.
Right.
So, yeah, it is a little bit weird. I mean, a good thing is, of course, you've got Adam Wainwright around the club still. He's
right.
He's not, you know.
Assuming they didn't actually leave him on the field in Florida.
Assuming he and Luke Gregerson aren't playing catch out there by themselves. And so that's going to be, you know, there will be some of that, you know, being able to still mentor and lead, but it's a little different when they're not on the field every fifth day, kind of showing by example as well. So hopefully Wainwright's issue is a limited thing. He's back in a week or two. We'll see how it goes, though. I mean, hamstrings, especially on pitchers, seem to be kind of interesting. An interesting thing. I mean, I'd rather that than an oblique or anything like that, but it could still be a while before it heals up, depending on how severe it is. With him on the DL, as we said, Jack Flaherty comes up. With Gregerson on the DL, the big drama that we were having about who's going to get the last spot in the bullpen kind of fizzled out, because both Mike Myers and John Brebbia get to go this way with Gregerson's injury clearing the spot. You know, there were some other arms this spring, Josh Lucas and John Gant kind of come to mind that were very strong as well. If it had come down to Myers or Brebbia, who do you think would have gotten the call?
I think that would have been very interesting, because Brevia obviously pitched some really big innings for the Cardinals last year, and I can't really speak to the way that other organizations go about making those decisions because I don't follow them as closely. But the way that the Cardinals tend to make those decisions has what you've done for them in the past carries a lot of weight. So I would not have been surprised if Brevia was the guy, particularly because it's a pretty well-documented fact that Myers has not had the greatest success at the major league level. And Brevia was a guy that came in and really helped stabilize a bullpen that was on the brink of complete disaster last year. Now, the bullpen never really was great, but Brevia did his job more often than not. So I think he would have been given the benefit of the doubt and probably would have been the guy to get the last spot. But I've been so impressed with the way that Myers has come into this season and not allowed last year's experience to destroy him, because it certainly could have. And if you read any of the articles that have been written about him or hear what he's had to say, it came very close to that. And it took some real introspection and some real encouragement from some specific individuals who were able to sort of help him get past that and be able to focus in on what he can do now, not what he did 6 months ago. But that says a lot about a guy's mental fortitude and his ability to just really hone in on what he needs to do. So I'm thrilled that he did end up making the opening day roster. I don't necessarily think that he would have if the choice came down to the two of them. But I would love to see him get an early shot and really claim that role, so that when the time comes to bring Gregerson back into the mix, the decision's a lot harder than it would have been, or that anyone would have expected it to be if Myers was the last guy to make the list.
Yeah, I think that, and it's also very interesting to hear these stories about Myers and saying how he never did shake that start, like you said. And we talk about, you know, closers just have to be able to forget that. And I know Myers isn't going to be a closer, but it just, I think, speaks to why some guys can't be a closer, isn't it? Because it is difficult to not have that in the back of your mind or in the front of your mind that, hey, every time I've pitched against big league hitters, they killed me. you know, and again, I was one of, I continue to say that Myers was just taking up room on this 40 man. There was never, he was never going to be anything that the Cardinals were going to be able to use, you know, and they have so much pitching depth. Why aren't we keeping a guy around here? Now, obviously he's changed everything and been so impressive. I think you're right. I think at least if I had been making the decision, Brevia would have gone and Myers would have gone to Memphis and at least let us see if this, what we've seen in the spring, would translate into real games. And I know he's pitched better at Memphis anyway, but you could at least see if the same kind of results, the same kind of dominance was there. But, you know, again, like you're right. Like you said, I hope that whenever Gregerson comes off the disabled list, they have to try to figure out what they're going to do, which is, you know, it's going to be dangerous, and it's probably going to be somebody that is going to go to Memphis that shouldn't, which is going to work up a whole lot of people because Bud Norris is still on this team. But, you know, that's a whole other topic.
This is my new conspiracy theory, is that John Mozeliak keeps someone like Bud Norris on the roster so that everyone talks about that and not anything else that goes wrong.
It's possible.
It's a distraction.
I mean, it works.
That's all it is.
In Broxton, I will say. I think there's, you know, and I kind of wrote about it last week. There's still, Norris has shown that there's value there. I think, you know, he had a really bad outing against the Mets, but for the most part this spring he did what he was supposed to. He came in, he threw an inning, he, you know, didn't give up any runs, and he, you know, strike out a batter and looked like a very solid eighth inning type of guy. We'll see if that translates. We'll see if it matters. You know, I mean, in the spring, you don't know without watching the games if they're facing double-A guys, if they're facing, you know, real major leaguers, you know, what everything is. But I still think there's value there, and the Cardinals have spent the money for him. I mean, should they have signed him? That's a different argument, but they did. And so I still think they can get something out of him. But that said, that doesn't mean people aren't going to complain. Because that's what people do, especially on Twitter. We also saw this week the final batters being selected for this team. And in a bit of a surprise, Yairo Munoz got the call over Harrison Bader. You know, I think most of us, when especially when you start at the beginning of the spring, really expected Bader to be that fourth outfielder. And obviously Munoz had a great spring, one of the better springs we've seen, but I was still a little surprised that they went with him, and I feel like it was probably the versatility that did it. What do you think?
Yeah, I absolutely think that the versatility played a role. I also think, though, that it's almost reminiscent of when Aled Macias came in and really forced the decision to be made in the spring because of what he did just day in and day out. You know, you'd like to think that spring training is enough of a competition that if you come in and put the best production out there, that you have a legitimate shot at making the roster. And similar to what I said about Brevia, I think it was Harrison Bader's spot to lose in many respects. And I don't know that he did anything to lose it as much as just not quite being as impressive as Munoz was. And certainly having the flexibility of probably being able to play any position on the field makes him a valuable asset in on the defensive side as well as offensively. So it'll be interesting to see how that translates and to see how a manager that lacks a little bit of creativity will utilize someone with that kind of versatility, because we've seen in the past this idea of just mass flexibility really backfire on the Cardinals because they move people around too much. So the idea of moving Matt Carpenter around to get Jose Martinez at bats, and then this idea of Munoz being able to play wherever you put him on the field, it's all good in theory, but it has to be executed well. And I have my doubts about that happening, but you know, there have been a lot of improvements this spring. Maybe that particular area of management skill has improved as well.
We could see. Don't forget, though, even with the great spring that Alamedes Diaz had, he still went to Memphis.
Right.
You know,
right.
It did take a, you know, of course, he was there for like 2 days until, what's his name? That shortstop guy that went for the Mets, you know, hurt himself, and we never saw him again. Ruben Tejada.
Has anyone seen him again? Seen Ruben Tejada again?
I think he was in like the Orioles. The Orioles released him this spring or something. I saw that.
Right. That makes sense.
He's still floating around somewhere. But yeah, I think I was just a little bit surprised. I know, of course, I've listened to Kyle, and Kyle was really arguing for the fact that Munoz still needed some development time. And Bader feels like he may be a fourth outfielder. You know, I guess it depends. I mean, what do you think? What if Bader can develop into something more, or if he's kind of reached what he's going to be, whether who needs the time in Memphis. But not having that backup shortstop, I mean, Greg Garcia is fine, but it's not a guy that you necessarily want out there a whole lot. And if you're only going to carry 12 hitters, 8 of which have to be on the field at one time, you got to have some people that can do some different things, because there's just not that depth on there that you get with 13.
And I think, to some extent, I don't know that this is why a decision like that would be made, but we did see a little bit of Harrison Bader at the major league level last year. Mm-hmm. I'm curious to see, like I said, how what Munoz did this spring translates in regular season games with regular lineups every day. And you know, there's part of me that sort of wants to see what he really has to offer, and if that versatility is worth investing in to the extent of giving him that roster spot. We sort of know who Harrison Bader is. And while there's certainly a lot to be explored there as far as his consistency or how he does with regular major league playing time, we sort of know what you're getting. So, to some extent, it's a bit of an experiment. It's a bit of a risk. But I don't, whether Kyle agrees or not, I don't hate the idea of, just seeing what he really can do at the major league level, so that the Cardinals really know what they're working with.
And that's fair and agreed. But then I kind of feel like where I guess I feel what Kyle's coming at is he's pointing at Carson Kelly and he's showing, he's saying, look, this guy should have stayed in Memphis last year, should have kept developing. And obviously he's going back to Memphis this year. You know, if Munoz still needs the development, is he going to get the at-bats in the big leagues that will help that? And we'll see. I mean, again, you're right. It goes back to whether the manager can be flexible, whether the coaching staff can help him be flexible without being, like, too flexible. seems to be the thing, you know, we don't want... Well, people say they don't want a different lineup every day. They completely forget Tony La Russa.
You want to talk weird lineups. Yes, let's go back to the Tony La Russa era for a minute.
I mean, what, 100... Wasn't there one year there was 150-something lineups and 162 games? I understood. I mean, because... And that was one of the differences of the managers. But you knew... Tony had enough backing and enough history. You knew he was pretty much keeping people fresh. And that was one of the reasons a lot of the time, second half, the Cardinals were very good because he was good about getting people the right kind of playing time in the right places, even if he had some unconventional ways of doing it. I don't think we trust Mike Matheny to do that because he's not shown us that he can, and he doesn't have that kind of Hall of Fame credentials to go along with it. So.
The one advantage that Munoz has is that he's not playing behind Yadier Molina.
This is true. He can actually play. This is true. So
the comparison to Kelly sort of falls off relatively quickly because he's not playing behind Molina. But I totally get the point there. But I do think that to some extent his need for development will be exposed relatively quickly at the major league level. And if that's the case, then there's really no harm in swapping him for Harrison Bader and sort of going back to that original plan. The potential value there, I think, makes it a reasonable risk to take at this point. But I do think that there shouldn't be a real long leash if suddenly you start to see, when he's not playing every other day, he's actually not great. If that's the case, then yes, absolutely. Let him go back to Memphis. Let him play more consistently. Let him get those at-bats every day and see if he can fix some of those holes in his game before he comes back up again.
And I think a lot of that, again, either with the last hitter or even the last pitcher, was a little bit of a false choice because this rotation, it's going to be a strong rotation between Memphis and St. Louis. I mean, it was like, okay, who gets to go ride in the cars and be a part of opening day, which is cool, but the loser of this
but don't unpack your suitcase.
Yeah, I mean, the loser of this competition is not going to be eating barbecue all year long, at least not Memphis barbecue. They could, I guess, come up and eat St. Louis barbecue, but that's a totally different topic for UCB weekend. they're going to be up here. Harrison Bader's going to play up here.
Yeah.
Myers and Brebbia both are going to play up here. Josh Lucas will be up here. John Gant will be up here. You know, probably Ryan Helsley, Dakota Hudson maybe at some point in time. Some of the other guys may as well, although some of the others have the 40-man roster to deal with. And as far as I know, they still haven't cleared that up for the, Pena edition. But there's going to be some 40-man choices to do, but that's the only reason that you wouldn't see Garcia up here, Jag, as they call him, or a Rosarena.
They not there. Being Kyle and Joe.
Yeah, well, Kyle's got to
okay.
call. You
can
know,
call
those, prospect after dark guys, as much as we may want to be careful about acknowledging them, still are a group.
if they want to insist on a nickname, they got to own it. So
that's right. it's not a bad one to have because I keep forgetting if it's Adonis or Adolis or what sometimes. So
it's much simpler.
We just go with
works
that.
Better for everyone.
Right. But anyway, Oscar Mercado is on the 40-man. He could be up. I mean, there's going to be a lot of guys.
Yeah.
rotating through. When I go at the end of the year to write the exit interviews, there's going to be a lot of them.
And good luck!
Maybe guys that played 10 innings or something, but there's going to be a lot of them. We're going to see a lot of people, and so it is, you know, it is what it is. We'll get to see them in different places, and that road is going to be a well-traveled. So, as we said, as we start to wrap the show up, the Cardinals will play on Thursday. I guess it's really our last chance to have optimism or whatever it may be of the spring and look at an unblemished season. What do you want to see out of the gate? I mean, not even like this week necessarily, but maybe this first month. Is there something that you need to see the Cardinals do to feel a little bit more confident about them?
Not go 3-9?
That was my answer.
That'd be great.
You can't take my answer.
I'm good at stealing people's answers to things. I would like to see, you know, I was telling someone tonight, I've been pleasantly surprised by some of the development and the way that this team has sort of started to gel. I was not particularly optimistic when spring training started, particularly about the bullpen and in some ways about the lineup itself. And obviously about Chris Archer, but you know, that's what I do. Yeah. So, you know, I think that the way that the offense has played the last week and a half or so is very encouraging. The way that the pitching staff has really come around, the improvements that Michaelis has made, it's really encouraging. The bullpen guys, I mean, there's no one that I point to that I'm like, oh, I'm really worried about this guy coming out of spring. Except for, I mean, Tommy Pham seems to be the one guy that really hasn't gotten anything going, but that's sort of what Tommy Pham does. And then he turns it on later on in the year, which hopefully isn't that much later, considering he's not starting the year at Memphis. But he's the only one that I feel like isn't coming out of the spring feeling like, okay, this is good. We're in a good place. So that said, I think what I want to see is that translates to real baseball and that they don't leave that all in the spring. Because while I still don't think this team is the most talented, I still think that they are some, like I said earlier, proven commodities away from really contending, at least on paper, with some of the top teams in the National League. The kind of baseball they've been playing the last week and a half or so is not terrible. They should win a lot more games than they lose if they play like they have the last couple of weeks. So that's sort of a long-winded answer and a long way of saying that what I want to see out of this first month is that you know, these guys are for real. I want to see that Ozuna is for real. I want to see that Matt Carpenter is healthy. I want to see that Luke Weaver is actually legitimately a top of the rotation guy. And, you know, then the secondary part of that is that guys stay healthy, which is already not happening. So maybe I should just go ahead and stop wishing for that.
Yeah. Although, again, depending on the severity of those things, the Cardinals actually got off fairly light this spring.
Yeah.
I'd like to think it's about time for them to get a little bit of luck in the injury department. We'll see if that happens or if everybody, you know, breaks an arm tomorrow or something like that, just because I said that. in which case,
we all know who to blame, though. So
yeah, at least we'll know. I mean, it'll be great. Great to know when half the team shows up in casts in New York. You know, maybe they'll have me sign them before they hit me with them. anyway, but yeah, I think that's, I want to see, I think the biggest thing we want to see is how the bullpen is used.
Yeah.
How much, you know, and again, I don't know that we're going to know how much impact Mike Maddux has on the decision-making process, because I don't think they're going to come out and say, you know, Matheny's not going to come out and say, well, I was going to go with this guy, but Maddux said this one, and hey, that worked. Or, hey, he told me to go with this guy, and it blew up, so I'm never going to listen to him again. You know, I don't think we're going to get anything like that. I mean, it's a united front, you know, whoever, whatever works, whatever doesn't work, the manager's going to take the blame and the staff's going to back him up. You know, I mean, whichever works. But it'll be interesting to see if we can actually tell some different usage and some different bullpen. And I think he's got more options in the bullpen. Like you said, there's not a whole, there's not a Jonathan Broxton. There's not a guy out there that's like, oh man, here we go. It's over. And there's some guys that are really exciting out there. So it makes it harder to make the wrong choice. Doesn't mean he can't do it, but it's just harder.
Challenge accepted. Yeah,
exactly. but I think that's what we want to see. I'd like to see the offense start off well. You're right. You know, hope it looked like Tommy Pham, you know, took like 800 at bats in a minor league game yesterday and finally kind of got a little bit of a groove, maybe. If this offense clicks like it was, I'd also like to see Marcelo Ozuna get off to a good start.
Yeah.
And it, you know, we were talking, what was it like? It was only like 2 or 3 weeks ago. We were talking about how he might be pressing and trying to accommodate, you know, get adjusted to the new team and try to prove that he can do something. Well, he's hitting like 340 or something in the last 2 weeks. With,
I think, you know, he's all right.
Yeah, he seems to finally gotten it to click, and I hope that it carries over into the regular season and we can see
and
a lot of that.
We, not to, you know, rabbit trail too much here, but we have talked a lot over this offseason about the fact that Ozuna's a really strong piece, but maybe not the organization-changing piece that we were hoping for. Mm-hmm. But I really like the way this offense sets up with him in that four spot. Mm-hmm. I think that it does a lot of the things that we wanted a big bat to do, maybe just without being quite as big of a bat as we were hoping for. But if that's the case, and if he can take some of the pressure off some of the guys around him, whether it's Tommy Pham or Paul DeJong or Matt Carpenter, it could really free up a lot of those guys to just be the hitters that they are, as opposed to trying to be the middle of the order bat. And that in and of itself, I think, could really transform this offense. And I think we're seeing shades of that already early this spring. So I like I said, I was not particularly optimistic when the spring started and even a couple of weeks in. But as they've gone along and as they've started to sort of figure out some of those roles, and now that Matt Carpenter's actually playing baseball, I am finding myself surprisingly excited to see the way this roster really comes together and see what they can do when the scores count.
Yeah, I think that's there's a lot of good here, and we'll see if it carries over or if it's just a little bit of false hope from the spring, but it does feel like you said, this team's going to win more games than they lose. And really, you know, for me, that's what I want out of a baseball team. I'm watching a game. I'm watching a game every day.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't want to be miserable more times than I'm happy. You know, I mean, that's just what it boils down to.
Yeah.
And so hopefully we'll see a lot of interesting baseball and good baseball and winning baseball this year. So, like I say, Cardinals kick it off on Thursday, along with every other major league team, which is interesting. And then they have a day off Friday, which is always weird. When it happens,
such a letdown.
Very rare thing, but yeah, especially on a Friday, you know. But anyway, and I think it's like middle of next week before we actually get a regular 7:05 start. It's you know, early
weird
things.
First week.
Yeah, but anyway, so we look forward to doing this. We'll recap every single solitary game this year, as Tara will. She's promised, I think, is what she said. Yeah, promised to do that every game.
That's exactly what it was. That's how that was worded.
Go subscribe
multiple
over,
times.
That's right. Go subscribe over at Bird Seeds. And obviously, you can rate and review us if you haven't already. But until next week, when we talk about real games, when we talk about a series against the Mets that counted and hopefully was a successful one, I am Daniel, and that is Tara. Good night.
Hey Cardinals fans, thanks for listening to this week's show. If you liked what you heard, you can find us on iTunes. Just search Gateway to Baseball Heaven under podcasts and click subscribe. While you're there, feel free to give us 5 of those little gold stars or even a quick review. And tune in next time as we break down another week in baseball heaven.